So I've been looking at identities and conflicts connected with the different elements of the United Kingdom, Scotland, Wales, Ireland. Quite interesting and very different cultures. We're very lucky in Britain to have English culture and Scottish culture and Welsh culture and Irish culture. It's very, very lucky. And these are big groups of people living in the same place. And when you have millions of people living in the same place, you can develop a culture which is really quite strong. But also in England, England has always been, or Britain has always been, a place of immigration. And so for the next 3 weeks, approximately, I want to talk about immigrants. Now, we're all immigrants, if you go back far enough. My great-grandparents came from Ireland. And what I'm going to do, first of all, I'm only going to talk about the biggest groups of immigrants. First of all, I'm going to talk about Jewish immigration, which was most important at the end of the 19th century, the beginning of the 20th century, and then in the 1940s, two waves of Jewish immigration. When I have finished talking about Jewish immigration, next week probably, I will talk about Irish immigration, then West Indian immigration, on the earth, after that, what we call Asian immigrants. Now, bizarrely, in Britain, when you say Asian, il faut traduire pas asiatique, mais indo-pakistanais. Because Asian does not mean Chinese. In Britain, Asian means from India and Pakistan. Well, l'Asie, c'est très grand, alors, voilà. And finally, I want to look at the most recent immigrations from Eastern Europe, Poland, Czech Republic, etc. So, Jewish, Irish, West Indian, Asian, and Eastern European. So, I'm not going to talk about Chinese immigration, and I'm not going to talk about Italian immigration, but there are a lot of Chinese people and Italian people in Britain. I'm just going to talk about the biggest groups, and also the groups which have suffered the most from racism. Because it's impossible to talk about the history of immigration without talking about the history of racism. You cannot understand it. I apologise for this because racism is rather depressing, but I will also try to look at some of the more encouraging and optimistic things which are going on. So first of all, then, Jewish immigration. So first of all, who are the Jews in Britain today? And then secondly, what were the big waves of immigration? Well, in Britain, in the census, or lors du recensement, 10 years ago, there was a question, what is your religion? Now, it's an optional question, you are not obliged to answer, but British culture is not like French culture, and people like to give information about themselves. Yeah. It's true that in France, they say, mais de quoi vous vous mêlez, on n'a pas gardé les vaches ensemble. Yeah? And it is, oh, il a posé une question sur moi, qu'est-ce que c'est gentil, je vais lui raconter. Yeah? It's very, very different culture. Yeah? And so most people answer the question, and 260,000 people, 260,000 people said, my religion is Jewish. Now, of course, yeah, 260,000. In Britain, yes. In the United Kingdom, to be strict, yes. Ça fait la deuxième population juive de l'Europe après la France. Okay, number two. Yeah, we're number two. Now, of course, Jewish people in England are like Catholics or Protestants. The level of religious practice is slowly declining. So a lot of people are Jewish, but are not very religious. Nevertheless, in the United Kingdom today, there are these four religious organisations. The biggest one, United Synagogue, that's the big one. Relatively traditional. Reformed Judaism is the second one. Liberal Judaism is the more left-wing organization. And finally, again, the Masorti, which I don't understand very well, but it is a new movement. The Masorti is rather special because in America, the Masorti have women rabbis. Yeah. Of course, most of these organizations have only men as rabbis, but the Masorti also have women, although not yet in Britain. Let's go back then into the history. So that's today. But let's go back into the history of ah oui, c'est pour ça. Not yet, no. L'histoire, c'est pas encore. This is the Jewish Chronicle, which is the London newspaper for the Jewish community, one of the... And it's an important newspaper. First of all, it is the oldest Jewish newspaper in the world. It has been published continually in London since the 1840s. On this particular day, there's a rather unusual headline from a small organisation called Jews for Jesus. I don't understand the details. It's a sort of... here is another one. Two things here. First of all, notice this is the Jewish Chronicle North. So this shows that it's quite a strong newspaper, because now they are having different versions for the north of England and the south of England. Yeah, so it's okay. Yeah, the situation is good. Also very interesting, because people in the north of England are very interested in the north of England and not interested in London. So I'm not surprised. At this, welcome to our Northern edition. It's quite a popular newspaper. You can see there are stories about Harry Potter, yeah, etc. You know, so it's not just to talk about religion. Yeah, Harry Potter is not so religious. This is another newspaper, much much smaller. This is mostly read on the internet. Liberal Judaism, LJ Today. And in this particular issue, they are talking about 100 years of liberal Judaism. So, you know, there's pretty old traditions. I will come back to the question of Zionism a little later on. Okay, so now we can go have a look at some of the prettiest buildings. This is the most beautiful of the synagogues in London, the East London Synagogue. I imagine it was built about 100 years ago. I don't have the exact dates. The East London Synagogue. Here it is again. Same thing. Notice the fire exit at the top. Yes, okay. And I imagine this represents the tablets of Moses. I imagine that. I'm really not an expert on this stuff. This is just a book about the history of Jewish London. So, let's go back into history very briefly. I'm not going to give you a long history, it's too long. The first Jews in Britain is in the 11th century, yeah, with William the Conqueror, Guillaume le Conqueror, arrive avec une communauté juive. Ok, alors c'est... however, in the Middle Ages, in the 13th century, the Jews were expelled from Britain. There was a period in the Middle Ages where several kings, the King of Spain, the King of England, they expelled all the Jews from their countries. For rather complicated reasons. Jews were not allowed to take a whole number of professions and were specialized in some other professions. One of the problems in medieval Europe was that at the time, Christians, in theory, should never take interest from a loan. You have some of this today with Islamic banks and so on. And so the Jews were the only people allowed to lend money. Only the Jews in England were allowed to lend money. And they were not allowed to take part in many other professions. And so the expelling of the Jews was a political and economic measure and not a religious measure as such. It is Oliver Cromwell who will change the situation. So hundreds of years later, donc au 17e, 400 ans plus tard, Oliver Cromwell will change the situation. Oliver Cromwell, remember, stood for religious freedom, except for Catholics. And if you give religious freedom to all the different kinds of Protestants, it seemed logical to Oliver Cromwell to accept that it was okay to be Jewish as well. And so the Jews come back to England in at the time of Oliver Cromwell in the 17th century. This is what we call the resettlement, la réinstallation. And here you have a plaque for the sites of the first synagogue after the resettlement. So the first synagogue established in Britain after the resettlement was in 1657 at the place where you can find this plaque, which I can't remember. Okay, commemorative plaque. The Jews came from Spain and Portugal. This group of Jews came from Spain and Portugal. And this small group of Jews not very big, will become established and relatively well integrated. When there is a big wave of immigrants at the end of the 19th century of very poor Jews, the Jews who are already in England are not necessarily so happy. Yeah, they have a fairly stable situation, and a large number of extremely poor Jews are arriving, and the result is a rise in anti-Semitism. So there will be conflict. We will see this coming. We sometimes talk for the first group of Jews, we sometimes talk of the Anglo-Jewish establishments. L'establishment Anglo-Juif. Right, so let's have a little look at then the 18th and 19th century. There were still some problems for the Jews in Britain, because if you wanted to become a lawyer or a member of parliament or to buy land, you had to sign an oath on the truth, on the true faith of a Christian. So the normal thing to do if you wanted to buy land or to join the army was to sign on the true faith of a Christian. Now, the reason for this kind of contract was not because of the Jews, but the result was that it was a problem for Jews. And some Jews then refused to join the professions, and other Jews said, well, okay, I'm fine. And so it was difficult to become a member of parliament or to join the professions. But little by little, during the 19th century, the barriers were reduced. So we have the first Jewish lawyer in Britain in 1835. No, c'est pas lui. Also, we can see that some Jewish people were very well accepted and became integrated into the elite. David Solomons becomes the Lord Mayor of London in 1855. Il est le Lord Mayor de Londres. Alors, quand on est maire de Londres, bon, on peut se dire qu'on est intégré. Okay, yeah, so David Solomons becomes the Lord Mayor of London. And little by little, there are new laws to allow equal rights for Jewish people. For example, after 1856, Cambridge University accepted Jews. 20 years later, Oxford University accepted Jews. So you have, for the whole of the 19th century, the situation is better. Now, of course, for most Jews, the fact that you can be accepted at Cambridge University or Oxford University is not very interesting, because Oxford University and Cambridge University are only for the rich. But nevertheless, symbolically, it's very important. There is the beginning of equal rights. But the most famous Jewish leader is Benjamin Disraeli, who becomes Prime Minister in 1868. So again, we can see that for the richer sections of the Jewish community, there were not such big problems. Disraeli was famous for writing this book, Sybil, or The Two Nations, which is a novel. Yeah, at this time, you had prime ministers who wrote novels. Well, that's very original. Can you imagine François Fillon writing a novel? Maybe, yeah, maybe. Okay, this is a classic novel about poverty and riches in Britain, about poor people and rich people in Britain. One of the last barriers to Jewish people was Parliament. And the first person, the first Jew to become a member of Parliament, Jews became member of Parliament by signing on the true faith of a Christian. But some Jews refused. And in 1858, the law was changed, and it was no longer necessary to sign on the true faith of a Christian to become a member of Parliament. And the first Jewish member of Parliament who did not sign on the true faith of a Christian was Lionel Rothschild. Qui avait un poste au Parlement, mais un mauvais coiffeur. Okay, what could you do? Yeah, some things cannot be borne. So, you can see that some sections of the Jewish community were integrated into the elite. But this does not mean that anti-Semitism disappeared. Anti-Semitism continued, and here you have a drawing of this man, the same man, and this is a racist anti-Semitic cartoon. He is a member of Parliament, and he is shown as the king of the world, and these are all the kings and queens bowing down to him. Well, in fact, he was an important rich man like 1,000 other important rich men. But here he is shown as the king of the world, and this is the continued presence of anti-Semitism. We will see, I'm a specialist in Britain 100 years ago in the First World War, and anti-Semitism was general, was generalised. It was a generalised situation. I don't know what the situation is today in Britain. When I was at school in Britain, when I was 12 years old, 13 years old, in a Catholic school, anti-Semitism was general. It was general. Jokes against Jews were like every day. So it depends. Mondays, jokes against Jews. Tuesdays, jokes against Pakistanis. Wednesdays, jokes against Irish. We had a great time. Yeah, it was pretty stupid. It was pretty stupid. We were 12, you know, what can you do? Now, the situation changes dramatically at the end of the 19th century. Because in the west of Russia and in the east of Poland, the situation for Jews became really desperate. First of all, they were very poor, like everybody else in Western Russia and Eastern Poland at the time. But there were a series of pogroms, a series of attacks on Jews, and many, many Jews were killed in Russia and in Poland by pogroms, racist attacks on Jews. And so a lot of Jews thought it would be let's leave here, let's leave Russia, let's leave Poland. This was very hard for them because they had been in the same place for 100 years, 200 years, 3 years, 300 years. So there was a wave of immigration leaving Russia and Poland, of Jewish immigration leaving Russia and Poland. This was possible because of the steamship. Remember, the Industrial Revolution is continuing, and now you have the steamship. It's not so expensive to go to England or to America if you are in the third class. It's not very comfortable. And the first place that the Jews came to was England. Very often, they wanted to go to America, but they came to England as a first stop. This was a typical thing. They did not generally speak English. What language did they speak? Yiddish, yeah, Yiddish. That is a Jewish language from Central and Eastern Europe, still current today. And they came to England hoping for better. It was pretty difficult when you arrived in England, just the same as when you arrived in New York. You have a medical examination, and if you're not healthy, you're not allowed in. And very often, of course, when the immigrants arrive, they don't know where to go. Many of the young women are obliged to become prostitutes because they have no other way of eating. And some of the Jewish community already in Britain established charities to help the new immigrants. And this is one of them, a Jews temporary shelter established in 1885. Now, in fact, at this time, 90% of the immigrants were Jews. So a Jews temporary shelter was not meant to discriminate against non-Jews. It's just that it was the Jews who were coming. Yeah? Nobody else was leaving Russia and Poland at this time, fundamentally. So Jews temporary shelter. Notice, of course, it's written in two languages. I don't know if it's Hebrew. I think it's Hebrew, but I'm not sure. But other sections of the Jewish community in Britain were not so happy about the arrival of these immigrants. There was, in the same year, there was established the Jewish Association for the Protection of Girls and Women because of the danger of prostitution. Now, various other organizations also tried to help. This plaque, 1896, this marks the 130th anniversary of the Board of Guardians and Trustees for the Relief of the Jewish Poor. Okay, so this is the Board of Guardians for the Relief of the Jewish Poor, pour le soulagement des pauvres, des juifs pauvres. Now, the economic crisis which hit Britain at this time meant that there were groups of people who wanted to stop the immigration. And you had a campaign against the immigration by poor Jews. So here, for example, 1902, you have a demonstration, a great public demonstration under the auspices of the British Brothers League in favour of restricting the further immigration of destitute foreigners into this country. So destitute means extremely poor. Yeah, destitute foreigners. Notice you cannot see the word Jewish, but in fact all the poor immigrants, almost all the poor immigrants are Jews at this moment. And so this demonstration will be held at the People's Palace in Mile End in London on Tuesday, January the 14th, 1902. The chair will be taken at 8 p.m. sharp by Major Evans Gordon, Member of Parliament, who will be supported by Members of Parliament, County and Borough Councillors, Members of Boards of Guardians of all shades of politics, and Ministers of Religion of all denominations. In fact, the British Brothers League gets some support from some rabbis and some priests against immigration. And here you have a cartoon showing the poor Jews. You can tell it's a Jew because of that beard. The poor Jews arriving, and Britannia saying, no, you can't, go away. Yeah. Okay, so that was interesting because it's the first time. Okay, so the result is in 1905, there is the Aliens Act, which is a law restricting immigration into Britain. 1905. Now, this is interesting because it is the first law in Europe restricting immigration. Before 1905, nobody imagined that they would want to pass a law to restrict immigration. It would be a rather bizarre idea. So the very first one. However, of course, it was difficult to establish. And in total, after 1880, between 1880 and 1914, probably 1 million Jews arrived in Britain. Many of them immediately left for America. But there was a large number of people coming through. America, New York, Buenos Aires, Quebec, etc. In London, the East End of London, which was the cheapest part of London, became very much a Jewish community. The East End of London was entirely Jewish. The newspapers were in Yiddish. The theatre was in Yiddish. The songs were in Yiddish. It was a really little Yiddish settlement in the East End of London. Also in Leeds, in Glasgow, and in Manchester. In each case, in the poorest parts of town, in the cheapest parts of town. What to do when you have nothing? Here you have the South East London Synagogue at the time. And here this is just a document of a Jewish marriage in 1904. And here you have, isn't that beautiful? This is the National Jewish Hospital, opened in 1921. It's a Jewish hospital. Remember, at the time, all hospitals are private. Yeah. And so there's one especially for Jews. Now, this Jewish community in London from 1900 to 1940 produced some famous writers, poets, and painters, and I just want to talk to you about a few of these. This Israel Zangwill is one of them, and he wrote this book, Dreamers of the Ghetto, which is about the ghetto of the Jewish ghetto in London. It's about the atmosphere in Jewish London at the time. But this man has written another book, which is very famous, and all of you know the title. The melting pot. This is the origin of this expression, the melting pot. He invented the expression in this play, The Melting Pot, The Great American Dream by Israel Zangwill. Now, the melting pot, it is an expression which we often do not use correctly. The original idea of the melting pot is that these people come, they are Polish, Jewish, Norwegian, Italian, etc., and they become Americans. They forget all their origins and they become something new. That's the original idea of the melting pot. Today we use, parfois surtout en français, on utilise melting pot for many, many different reasons. But the original one was assimilation. We will produce Americans who are completely different from everything they were before. And here you can see it's very violent. It's very violent. Does it? C'est un pas envie spécialement. Yeah, that's the idea. Yeah, so here you've got they're coming to the Statue of Liberty, and they are being made into. So this is Israel Zangwill. So this is just more of this same Jewish community in London. Then here you have the Stepney Jewish Boys' School. So you can see that this is in the 1920s. You can see that the community is established now. They have found money to build a school, of course, for the boys, especially because the boys were considered to be more important than girls at the time. There are also a large number of day schools. Very, very, very big. And youth organisations also. Where did the Jewish workers in the east of London, where did they work? Well, mostly they worked in making clothes. Making clothes was the big industry in the east of London. This can be seen by the development of Jewish trade unions. This is the banner of the trouser makers. C'est les fabricants de pantalons. À l'époque, c'était très spécialisé la fabrication de vêtements. And this is the trade union of the Jewish workers in the east of London. And what is interesting about it is you can see that some of it is in English and some of it is in Hebrew or Yiddish, I don't know. One or the other. Okay, that's 1882. And you have the general socialist slogans. We're marching towards the morning. We're struggling, comrades all. Our aims are set on victory. Our enemies must fall. With ordered step and flag unfurled, we'll build a new and better world. Yes, this is very normal for the time. Most trade union banners at the time would have this sort of thing in them. In 1889, there was a big strike of about 6,000 Jewish workers in the trouser industry. And again, in 1912, there was more than 10,000 workers on strike. And all the Jewish trade unions together had about 25,000 members at this time. Okay, so it's a minority, of course, of London, very concentrated, so a very, very concentrated community. Of course, at this point, the First World War arrives, 1914, the First World War arrives, and so life is not so good. About 50,000 British Jews join the army, about 50,000, 50,000. En tout, il y a 5 millions de soldats. Donc, so it's a minority. I have a little song for you here on this question. I hope. If it works. So this is a song from the music hall during the First World War. Okay, this is a recording from 1915. That's the original recording from 1915. And the title is Sergeant Solomon Isaacstein. Now, I don't know if you understood the words, but it's a contradictory song because it has two different messages. First of all, it says, because we are in a war, we need unity, and we are happy because the Jewish, the British, the Jewish and the Irish and the Welsh are all together in unity for the war. And this is why you have oi, 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 give three hearty cheers. And also you have, he's the pet of the fighting line. C'est le chouchou des troupes. Okay. So on the one hand you have this, we are happy that there are Jewish soldiers. And on the other hand, it is an anti-Semitic song. Later on in the song, you will hear, which I probably won't play you, you will hear all the normal stereotypes of Jews interested in money, etc., etc., etc. So you have a contradictory song. We are happy to have these Jews, but we know what they're like really. A very, very contradictory song. And that this was a smash hit. C'était dans le top 50, c'était un grand tube. Because at this time, it is perfectly possible to sell a million copies of an anti-Semitic song, racist songs. There are also racist songs against black Africans as well. The atmosphere is like that. So you get this contradiction at this time. Okay. Allez, encore un petit peu, mais c'est un peu affreux. Quand même. Oui, c'est le seul juif écossais dans l'armée, dans le régiment irlandais. It's supposed to be funny. Okay, it's not that funny, in fact, but there you go. Okay, so that's the kind of contradictory situation you have at this particular time. There was a particular... Non, je vais sauter cette partie-là, c'est pas si important. Okay, now, of course, during the First World War, most of the First World War was pretty depressing, but it did produce some amazing poets and painters, and some of these were Jewish. In particular, then, Isaac Rosenberg. Isaac Rosenberg is a poet, and along with Wilfred Owen and Siegfried Sassoon, wrote the poems about the First World War. Here are poems by Isaac Rosenberg. Poetry Out of My Head and Heart. He was in the army and he wrote poems about the experience of soldiers. Pretty good stuff, in my opinion. We also have a painter, Jewish painter, British Jewish painter, Mark Goettler, then. And here is a plaque. Yeah, you see a plaque if you're famous. In London, who lived in London then from 1891 till 1939, and this is the kind of things he did. Yes, this is relatively quite modern at the time. This is quite modern at the time, sort of expressionist. What's interesting about this guy is he arrived in London very poor, and he. Went to art college, but had to stop because he didn't have any money. And he worked for a while in a company of stained glass pour fabriquer des vitraux. And then finally, with the help of the Jewish Education Aid Society, he was able to continue studying art. So we can see that that's an example of how the organisations of the Jewish community could sometimes protect people from the effect of poverty. Yeah, that it was because of the Jewish organisations he was able to continue studying art, which is a good thing because he produced this kind of stuff. J'avais un autre? Non? Non. Okay. Je croyais avoir un deuxième. Doesn't matter. Okay, who else do we have then? Well, puisqu'on est pour l'instant sur la production artistique, je vais avancer jusqu'à beaucoup plus tard. Some more of the famous British Jews. Harold Pinter is one of the most famous British playwrights. His best known plays are The Birthday Party in the 1950s, The Homecoming, and Betrayal. These are the most famous plays by Pinter. Of course, he is from a later generation than Goethe. He's also famous because of his support for Palestine 3 years ago. In the same generation, after the Second World War, we have Jacob Epstein, sculptor, British Jewish sculptor. You can see some of his works at the Centre Pompidou in Paris, the Beaubourg. Of course, most British Jews were not sculptors or painters or anything particular, but that is a particular joint. And one of the most famous British painters today is a British Jew, and this is Lucian Freud. Rather interesting painter. This is a portrait of the Queen, of course, and I think you will agree that it is very different from your normal portrait of a king or a queen. Yeah? Something very specific that he's doing here. Do you think she was happy with it? It's a complicated question, isn't it? Do you think she was happy with it? Yeah. So certainly one might think that she was unhappy. Why would you be unhappy if this was you? It's not sort of beautiful and charming and so on, yeah? Is there anything positive about it? No? You know, I think there is. I think she looks determined. Yeah. She asked him to paint this picture. Now, we don't know if she was happy afterwards, but it was painted from the Queen. The Queen sat there and he painted it for 6, 7, 8, 10 hours, yeah? So she may be a queen, but she's not stupid. She must have known that she wouldn't have a pretty little picture from Lucian Freud, yeah? So, of course, because she's the queen, when the painting was finished and published in the newspapers, what did she say about the painting? She's the queen. What did she say? Nothing. That's the most important thing about being queen. Keep your mouth shut, yeah? No, really, it is general policy that we say the Queen's slogan is never explain, never apologise. You're the Queen, yeah? I'm the Queen, yeah? Get lost. Okay, and this one. So certainly something, I mean, some people like modern art and some people don't, but certainly Lucian Freud is very respected. And another difference, qui est mort plus tôt, il aurait dû être avant, il est mort en 80, Oskar Kokoschka, Austrian Jew who came to Britain as a refugee. What I like about Oskar Kokoschka is that some of his best paintings he painted when he was 92. Okay? When he was very, very old. This is... Je crois que je l'ai mis au mauvais endroit et ça c'est encore Goethe. Mais je vais vérifier. Donc, je dis rien sur ça autant au cas où je dis des bêtises. The other area where there are quite a lot of Jewish inputs is entertainment. And here is Joe Loss and his orchestra. Now, Joe Loss and his orchestra were extremely famous pop superstars when my mother was young. In 1952, 1957, Joe Loss and his orchestra. Remember, this is before the discotheque, because although you have a gramophone, there are no amplifiers, so you cannot make a room full of people dance with a machine. You need a real band. You have no choice. And these are the dance bands, which were extremely popular. Also, no television. When my mother and father were 20 years old, they went dancing four times every week. And this was the normal thing. Of course, it's slightly different dancing. Yeah? You finish at 10 o'clock. You start early, you finish at 10 o'clock. And just to give you an idea of the atmosphere, I do have a song. What people were listening to just before the world changed with the arrival of rock and roll. This is just before rock and roll. That is the last moment before the arrival of rock and roll. Buddy Holly, Chuck Berry from America, which will transform popular music forever. But that's what was really important at the time. Socially, it's very important. Of course, this is music to dance to, and this is music to dance to in couples. Okay, now this is very, very important because dancing in couples today appears rather traditional. At the time, it was a revolutionary change in women's lives because, remember, you were not allowed to talk to a man or touch a man, except when you were dancing. And so the introducing of dancing was actually a great modernization of social life. Whereas, and the reason that today there is not so much dancing in couples is because it's no longer necessary in the same way. It was the only space at the time. So something which is modern originally then becomes traditional. I think it's still the case that most dancing is individual. Yeah, that's still the case today. Nothing changing. Good. Just checking. I don't go to nightclubs very often anymore. They won't let me in. Okay. Just another couple of... I'm too young. Just another couple of Jewish... So there you go. There is Joe Loss playing all these this music. Also, just a couple of writers, British Jewish writers, Arthur Koestler. Now, Arthur Koestler wrote many books, novels, and quite political novels, really, quite political novels. I recommend a bit of Koestler. And finally, another... very famous British Jewish actor, Peter Sellers. Il est dans le personnage de l'inspecteur Clouseau. Yeah, l'inspecteur Clouseau du Ponte, de la Ponte Rose. Ou la Ponte Rose, comme vous dites à Paris. Okay, yeah, that's Peter Sellers, yes. Famous as an English representation of a French policeman. Why not? Okay, so that's just to give you some sort of idea of who are the Jewish people who marked the 20th century. I now want to go back in history to the 1930s. Because, of course, the 1930s was the tragedy across Europe for Jewish people from everywhere. And all Jewish families lost lots of people and the results have not finished today. Ça c'est le musée juif de Londres qui parlait justement du théâtre, etc. Voilà. This is it. In London in the 1930s, the fascist organizations, of course, the German fascist organizations are much more famous because they were successful. However, fascism was very strong in Britain. This is Oswald Mosley, who declared that the main enemy was Jewish people. This is in a situation where the international economic crisis led to mass unemployment, hunger, the hunger marches, unemployed people marched from Newcastle to London to protest against the terrible situation and so on. Now, Mosley's was not a small organization. When he had his meetings in a football stadium. Yeah, well, they had some support, yeah? People were desperate and they were ready to listen to very irrational politics. But the key moment came when, in 1936, Mosley and 3,000 of his friends decided that they were going to march across the east of London. Yeah. So, of course, they wanted to organise a fascist march through the Jewish part of town. It was not an accident, of course, through the Jewish part of town. If you imagine Marine Le Pen organising a demonstration at Barbès. Yeah? Yeah? It's a symbol. That is to say that all of the left said, if we accept this, they will never stop. It was a very, very important symbol. This was at Cable Street and Pour vous vendre la mèche. There were hundreds of thousands of Jews and communists and trade unions who stopped Oswald Mosley from marching through Cable Street. This becomes one of the important symbols of the left in Britain, Cable Street. Cable Street was the time when the left and the Jewish organisations stopped the fascists from marching through the East End. And here you have a modern... You can see this is quite modern. This is a modern memorial commemorating with the Labour Party, and there's the fascists, and there's the police, and so on. And this is another part of the same mural. The slogan, "They shall not pass." They shall not pass, yes. At the same time that this was happening, this is the period of the Spanish Civil War, and a number of British Jewish went to Spain to join the Republicans fighting against Franco, along with a lot of miners and railway men, mostly, in Britain. Here you get another plaque. We like plaques in Britain. So this plaque has been put up by the Tower Hamlets Environment Trust. The Battle of Cable Street. The people of East London rallied to Cable Street on the 4th of October 1936 and forced back the march of the fascist Oswald Mosley and his black shirts through the streets of the East End. And the slogan underneath then it was, "They shall not pass." And there you get... this is a photograph from the time. So there you get a bit of... And the impression that although there was some fighting, the general situation was that 3,000 fascists arrived and then went home. Because look at that, you know, it's just impossible for them to go anywhere. Also, during the 1930s, the Jewish community in Britain tried to organise a boycott of German goods. Perhaps you remember that in 1933, Adolf Hitler was elected leader of Germany. We often forget that he was elected. He was elected. It's important. In a situation of general desperation in Germany, where suddenly unemployment had risen by 3 or 4 million in 2 months. You know, it's a desperate, desperate situation. And the Jewish organisations in London tried to organise a boycott of German goods. And in particular, they tried to call on the government. They wanted to demand that the British government agree to boycott German goods. Okay, and here it says there are 50,000 Jews going to Hyde Park. Now, this is an interesting demonstration. Photographs of demonstrations are always interesting, but what is the first thing you notice? Well, the first thing I notice here, there are no banners. And this is the characteristic of a popular demonstration which is not mainly organised by political parties, trade unions, etc. Because people don't automatically have banners. They need to think about that. And so they're just there, just a popular demonstration. And a lot of people watching. Okay, so another example. Some of the Jewish refugees in London, because of course there was quite a lot of refugees after 1933, and some of them were in different left-wing organisations, including the Jewish anarchists there. In 1938, about 10,000 Jewish children came to London from Poland and Germany. The situation was so dangerous, and it was impossible. The adults would not be allowed to come to England, and so they gave their children to anybody who was going to England and said, you know, just take my child away. So terrible, terrible, tragic situation, you can imagine, having to give. And most of the children never saw their parents again. And about 10,000 unaccompanied Jewish children arrived in England. And another large group arrived at the end of the war. One of the big controversies about the Second World War is that, in general, Britain and America did not want to accept adult Jews in the 1930s. So that was one of the big controversial things. After the war, things got better. They couldn't really get any worse. And the Jewish community in Britain was able to live a normal life. By the time we got to the 1980s, there were two or three Jewish ministers in the British government. Today, of course, the Jewish community in Britain, like everywhere in the world, is very divided about the question of Israel. And here we have a couple of examples. These are Jews who are against Israel for religious reasons, a minority group. This is one of the more important, a much bigger group, Friends of Israel, and the same kind of group who were defending Israel. Of course, a lot of sections of the Jewish community defend Israel because of the history. But there are also groups like Jews for Justice for Palestinians against the politics of the Israeli government. So you get a big division. And in the Jewish families I know in Britain, ils sont gueux sans arrêt. I guess c'est la question. Yeah. So the general situation. Yeah? These people are against the policies of the Israeli government. against the policies of the Israeli government. So, very difficult question, but especially for the Jewish community. And this is the Jewish Students Organization, which is also active on other questions, that is to say, in this case, the cuts, les coupes dans les budgets pour les universités d'emploi. Okay. And that's all of that. So, to summarize, then, you get the three waves of Jewish immigration. The first one, very, very old, from the 16th and 17th century, establishing a certain Anglo-Jewish establishment. The second big wave, the end of the 19th century, mostly very, very poor, and establishing the East London, the Jewish part of East London, making clothes, making a lot of music, and generally surviving in a ghetto, and the third wave, which is connected with fascism and so on. Today, then, still quite a strong Jewish identity in Britain. The newspaper, the Jewish students group, and so on. Very confused and divided on the question of Israel. Anti-Semitism is definitely much lower today than 20 years ago, but it is still not unusual. Anti-Semitism is not rare in Britain. If you get into a taxi, you will hear things about Jews. You know, there's still plenty of anti-Semitism around. Okay, any questions on that? Because otherwise, I'm good. Yeah, any questions? Anything difficult there? Now, the Jewish community is rather special because it's based around the religion, whereas, as we will see, of course, the West Indians and the Irish are not necessarily based around a religion. Okay, it's only 1:45, but I'm going to stop there because I don't want to start on a completely different subject. Next time I will be talking about Irish immigration. But next week there is a test. Thank you. There is a test next week. Okay. What happened to my list of names? Oh, what? Il est au fond. C'est très bien. Attendez un instant, je vais éteindre.